everybody listening to Idobe. My name is Emily Burke, and you are listening to Waldman's Words. I feel like I need to introduce myself because my last name is not Waldman, even though there is an Emily Waldman out there. Anyway, welcome to the show. It is a brand new day, a brand new episode, or unless you're listening to this far, far, far in the past, an episode that we have done before and you just like, because this is a really good episode, but I feel like I say that about every episode. I'm kind of biased. But we do have Chris Qualls coming in. He is in a band called Tidal Babes that we actually just saw last night at the Echoplex. And if that name sounds familiar to you, the Echoplex and the Echo is where they hold Emo Night in Los Angeles. So if you've ever been to the world famous Emo Night, that is where it is. I've never been to an official Emo Night. I am a 22-year-old, not emo enough person, I guess, but it'll happen one day. I promise. Emo Night, we love you guys. Everyone here loves you. And I'm wearing all black today, so I'm super on theme. But getting back to that, Chris Qualls, Tidal Babes. This is what this episode is about. Chris is a super talented songwriter, producer, musician, guitar player, just everything. He knows how to do everything. So we're going to talk to him about everything. So we go pretty in-depth about songwriting and, you know, starting off bad and then moving on to the good and how long it takes to become an expert in something and with Riverside and all of that fun stuff. So if you're from Riverside, you get a huge shout out in the show. Yay. I am not. I'm from Los Angeles. So my thoughts about Riverside are, well, nothing. But I like it now because Chris Qualls is from there and Chris Qualls is pretty cool. So we're going to move on to the show really quick. I just need to do this quick intro and let you know that you can listen to Waldman's Words every single Tuesday live, hopefully what you're doing right now, at 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Eastern time, or you can listen anytime that you want on Idobe.com, iTunes, Spotify, and your Amazon Alexa. I don't know how long I'm going to keep saying about this Alexa thing. Just do it, goddammit. You can enable Idobe Radio on your Amazon Alexa by asking it to enable Idobe Radio, and you can play it whenever you want and say, Alexa, play Idobe Radio. So you have an Alexa, and you haven't enabled Idobe Radio, but you're listening to the show. I don't know what you're doing. I don't understand you. Feel free to hit me up at Emily Burke. Square up. Let's fight about it. Anyway, I'm going to calm down a little bit and we're going to get on with this episode. So welcome to Waldman's Words, featuring me, Scott Waldman, and Chris Qualls. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Waldman's Words. You probably just heard my voice from the intro, and now I am starting the episode too.
So whoa.
She's moving up in this world.
In this Waldman's Worlds.
We have Chris Qualls with us.
I haven't seen you in a really long time.
I know. It's been a good 16 hours, less than that, right? 12
sweet
hours.
Sweet 16. Well, right now it's 10:31, and I believe I saw you actually 13 hours ago.
All right.
There I just did go. Math, bro. Why are we so tight lately? What did I do with you yesterday? What did you do for us yesterday?
Ooh, it's all a matter of perspective, I guess. But you did come out to my show at the Echoplex where my band Tidal Babes played with the Ataris and Twilight Creeps. And it was
pretty
a lot
dope.
Of fun.
It was
as
dope.
As did Emily. Thanks a lot, guys.
I was there and it was great.
We both had a really good time. We watched your entire set. We got in through you and we are grateful. And Chris and I haven't known each other that long, but I could say we become fast compatriots due to the Facebooks, due to Frank Zumo, and due to the fact that you're a prolific writer and artist.
I would agree with that.
Thank you. due to all these compliments about me that you support with my hypothesis.
Yeah. Well, I figured if I just sat here in silence, you would keep going with the compliments, but
all right.
That's the end of the list.
Wait, can you pause for a second? I don't have any more compliments. But you actually like Juliana Theory, so that's a compliment.
Oh, I love him. That was fun, too.
That's where the last time I saw him before that.
Yeah,
that
was. I like your shirt today.
His shirt is pretty
cool.
Thank you.
It's multicolored.
Yeah. I feel like every time I've seen you, I've been wearing all black, so I wanted to spice things up with a little bit of color today.
Well, you did, and your shoes last night were pretty spicy.
Oh, yeah. I got those from Vans, custom at the Surf Open.
That's fucking sick.
Didn't notice what were on them.
They were all cheetah print.
Ooh.
All cheetah print, baby.
Sick. For the Cheetah Girls, your favorite group.
Obviously, yeah.
Obvi.
It's the only reason I went to Spain was Wait. The scene where they filmed the Cheetah Girls.
See, I didn't even get that reference, which proves that I don't know much about the Cheetah Girls, which sucks.
Well, you were never like an 11-year-old girl, so.
I mean, did you just assume my gender?
Yes.
Anyway, let's go back to the babes in the room. So before you were a title, I could be wrong, but were you born and raised in Riverside?
You are correct. I Ooh. Was born and raised in Riverside and then went to college at UCR, then lived in Huntington Beach and now LA. So
can you slow down? You are going so fast. I want to focus on Riverside, which is oft not discussed. I want to get into the nitty fucking gritty. I mean, I love your story and it's great, but this is a show wherein we go deep. So Riverside.
Okay, so I can't just deflect that question.
You
I have
can.
To expand
I mean,
it.
You can if you like. Honestly, like if there's a question I ask you that you don't want to answer, we could totally edit it out. We don't do that unless it's like, oh fuck, like there's something legal going on. But Riverside, growing up in Riverside, are you 38 or 37?
No, actually, I just turned 39 on Saturday.
Oh
so
fuck,
I am your age.
Happy
You're
birthday.
Older. No, I'm 38. Yeah. I did wish you a happy birthday, and I actually made you a mix, but I'm not complimenting myself anymore. So 39, so you have a little bit of wisdom on me. Growing up in your area, were there any local bands that you really liked?
Oh, God, there were so many. My favorite local band that really just did it for me because they went to my high school was Assorted Jelly Beans.
Oh, fuck yeah, ska punk.
I love them. Yeah, when I was starting sophomore year, someone played me the Specials, and I was just hooked. I was already into punk rock at that point, but I didn't really know about ska. Someone played me the Specials, and then a little bit later, I discovered Assorted Jelly Beans from a show at the
Radical
Showcase
Difference
Theater.
In ska from yeah. two-tone to like, blah, blah, blah.
Oh my God. So the more punk-influenced ska, third-wave ska punk, that really did it for me. So my first band I ever started in high school was a ska band that was very similar to a sort of Jelly Bean style, but with horns.
What were you called?
The Scandal.
With the
first,
K?
With the K. Of course, okay. With the K.
Every ska. Emily was in privy to the ska punk revival or movement in the mid-90s, like the third wave. I'll give you a little edumacation. So traditional ska actually predates reggae. And it was artists like the Scatolites and Laurel Atkin, or is it Aitken? I hope I'm right. Whatever. You're like, meh. And then what he was talking about with the Specials, like the two-tone era, that was bands like the Specials, Madness, and the Beat. I mean, we're like the same age, so we probably all discovered this at the exact same time, which I love. And then in the mid-90s, bands like No Doubt and Sublime kind of made the third wave go nuts, and then like Less Than Jake, Boss Tones, and Real Big Fish were like the big ones. And when I was making you this mix, I had no idea that you were like a ska kid like me, so I love that.
Love it.
My name even has Scott in it.
Oh, there you go.
So I really win. Scott.
I feel like you should start spelling it with an S-K-A then.
I actually did, and my mother disowned me.
Right, because it came out as scat?
Yeah, it came out kind of a little bit like a scar. Zing. So, Emily,
yes.
Do you have any questions about the mid-90s ska movement, or should we go dig deeper because he's so stoked to talk about Riverside?
I don't really have any questions. I mean, ska kind of passed by me in my lifetime. I was never—
In your crib. Yeah. It was the impression that you got.
I was never like alive or actively listening to music during a time when ska was having a moment. It really just was—
You stood on stage with Real Big Fish, though.
I did. I know who Real Big Fish are. I know who Gwen Stefani is.
Wait, who's Gwen Stefani?
You know, just a small act.
My father-in-law is her OBGYN. Anyway.
Okay, great.
No doubt about that.
I am not that close to
I'm
Gwen Stefani.
I'm not that close either.
but yeah, completely under the radar for me. Never had a moment. Was never on my satellite.
Well, I recommend that you leave this room right now and just listen to Losing Streak by Less Than Jake over and over.
Well, to the point where No Doubt, like, I don't even consider a ska band in my mind.
A lot of people would agree with you.
Yeah, I think they kind of transcended ska at a certain point. Yeah. And anytime you're on Kiss FM, I don't think you can claim to be a ska band anymore. You're just a pop band.
Wait, actually, counter argument, and this isn't intentional. I could totally see Kiss FM playing, like, some Special songs. I could see them playing some, like, early 80s, like, stuff. If I'm wrong, please tell me.
I'm wrong?
Okay. Yeah, one person thinks I'm wrong.
It's all K-Rock.
K-Rock for sure. Yeah. Maybe 98.7, but I don't know about Kiss FM.
Really?
Yeah. I think they're too busy with Rihanna and Ariana Grande to throw some specials in.
LA area radio stations.
Well, you guys are Cali people, but I don't know. Like, where I grew up, there was a station called Z100. I don't know if you've heard of it, but that's kind of the equivalent.
Is that Elvis is on?
Elvis Duran and all that stuff. And they, I mean, granted, maybe it's because I was listening to it in the 90s, but they would play like some old school, like they would play like Madness, and they would also play like New Kids. But anyway, I digress. I'm stupid. So back to you. So
Riverside.
Riverside. Yes. Well, we're going to Riverscod. So we're going to go right into your college days. So like, were you continuing to play? Were you playing guitar in your ska band? Like, I don't even know when you started, because you're a really talented guitar player with a really nice guitar.
Thank you. And I know you only say that because we have the same guitar.
No, I'm saying it because yours looks nicer than mine. And Telecasters are dope.
Telecasters are dope. So when I was playing in the ska band, started when I was 13, and I was playing bass. And at a certain point, my other friends that were in different bands were all home for the holiday, and the rest of our bands were gone. So we decided to kind of start jamming, me and two of my other buddies, and it ended up being a lot of fun because we basically played a bunch of pop punk covers. Rancid, MXPX.
What era Rancid?
Out Come the Wolves. I mean, Ruby Soho. Basically, at that point, we could play that entire album, and that was what
that's
we
were. That's a lot of songs.
I know. And that's what we were doing for the entire Christmas break, that all of our bands were gone, and we decided that felt really good, and there was some magical chemistry between the three of us. So at that point, we decided to start a pop-punk band called The
and
Centerfolds.
And this is before pop-punk was a term, pretty much, like as mainstream as it is now. Like, it meant a different thing. I feel like in the 90s, like, people thought of, like, Screeching Weasel pop-punk. And then, like, now it's, like, the drive-thru stuff.
Totally. And to be honest, we were equally influenced by all that old, you know, like a lot of the Bay Area stuff, as well as Screeching Weasel, but like the Queers, early Green Day, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Oh, loved Op Ivy. I mean, with the ska punk thing, that was like my favorite band at the time.
Would you argue that they might have been like the first, like, kind of like third wave type band or like ska punk band?
Oh, 100%. I mean, if not the first one, the first influential one.
Do you know about Op Ivy?
I do know about Op Ivy. But I think the only reason I know about Op Ivy is because of my time at Epitaph and with Rancid. So,
but I'm glad you do know, because I don't know too many people in their early 20s that like talk about Op Ivy.
Operation Ivy, everybody, was a band from...
Thanks for making the real name. I was doing the cool hipster slang.
Northern California, started by Tim Armstrong from the band Rancid. Very influential to bands like Green Day. And
Matt from Rancid. So, yeah. 2/4 of the current lineup of Rancid. So 2/3 of the original lineup of Rancid.
Basically, the 90s, like, punk era, 90s pop punk can all be traced back to Operation Ivy, so everyone should thank them.
And I just want to say that I have a lot of t-shirts, as you know, and the Op Ivy shirt I wear gets more attention than most of them.
Oh,
because people are just like, yeah.
Well, fun fact, first time I ever met Scott, he was wearing that.
Really?
Aforementioned Op Ivy shirt, yes.
Well, I didn't even say that intentionally because of that, but that's pretty sweet. That's when our My Chemical Bromance started.
Totally.
So tell me more, because this is when you really, really were taking it seriously.
Yeah, so we started a pop punk band and played, and that was around the senior year of high school. Started doing a lot of parties at the high school, a lot of opening spots at the local venues, and the band.
What's the local venues in Riverside?
There was a place at UCR called The Barn.
Okay.
That was my favorite place ever. It was on campus, and it was maybe 300 person capacity, so it had a lot of the
so it's comparable last
shows.
Night.
Yes.
Okay.
And then the Showcase Theater in Corona, and then all of the big shows were at the Glass House in Pomona.
Uh-huh.
So
we've been there together.
We have.
I like that venue.
Me too.
So we started doing a lot of opening gigs as well as high school parties, which we really started to become like a hometown favorite, especially at the high
school. What year was this? Give me a frame of reference.
98.
Okay, so just as like boy bands and new metal were getting huge.
Totally. Also, just as Blink-182 was starting to get pretty popular on the radio.
Yeah, no, this is like, Damn It was already a staple, and Enema of the State was like really anticipated. Totally. This is like just as Travis Barker left the Aquabats.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ska!
Whoa.
My band and I decided that we wanted to keep riding that momentum. So when I was making choices on where to go for college, I had a couple different offers and some scholarship opportunities because I played water polo at
the
time.
Did you put ska in scholarship?
Of course you played water polo.
I mean, dude,
that's
like, it makes
like
sense.
That's like a California teen, like...
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
I had blonde hair. I had blonde hair. I was so tan, bro.
Were you wearing like an Abercrombie like onesie?
No, I was still wearing Dickies and like rancid t-shirts and stuff like that, but
respect.
Yeah, water polo is like almost a rite of passage for a California teenage boy.
I moved to California when I was a teenage 22-year-old, but like I had no idea. I've been here 16 years. I had no idea water polo was popular.
Oh, it's like a huge high school.
Is it to
sport.
Get away from like the wildfires?
Ouch.
Zing.
So moving back to our story.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, wow. Guest is reining us in. Continue.
So we decided to go to UCR so we could keep the band together instead of going to separate colleges. And that was the end of my professional water polo career.
Wah, wah.
But we decided that we were going to take it serious, and every time we weren't in session for school, we were going to go on the road, spring break, Christmas break.
You knew what you wanted.
Long. Yeah.
That's wonderful. That's more than most people.
Well, I really just wanted to be on the road, but I promised my parents that I would at least do 2 years of college to give it a try to see how it went.
You come from a musical family?
No, I come from a music-loving family, but not really a musical family.
Emily. Mm-hmm.
I heard that my mom played saxophone when she was in the high school band, and the first time I heard that, I was surprised because I didn't think that she had any musical ability whatsoever. But growing up, they were always playing stuff. My dad tended to gravitate more towards the hard rock stuff.
Oh, cool.
And my mom was
like
on
Sabbath, like stuff like that.
All of that. AC/DC. I mean, his favorite bands are the Beatles and Rolling Stones. So there's definitely like the pop element of it. But
that's every dad who was born between 1941 and 1978. 100%. Every single one. I surveyed all of them.
And my mom listened to a lot of popular stuff like Madonna, Michael Jackson, all of that.
Parents were listening to like quote-unquote current stuff in the 80s, like because we're the same age, so like it's like when I talk about my dad, I'm not like going, yeah, he was really into Duran Duran.
Right.
That's cool.
Yeah, I feel like that kind of influenced a lot of my just songwriting, production, everything later in life because I had the rock side and the pop side since as early as I can remember.
Sensibilities.
Yeah. I can't even remember a time growing up where there wasn't music on at the house. Radio, records.
So they really were music appreciators.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. 100%. I mean, it takes a village.
They were very supportive too. Like when I told them I wanted to start playing an instrument, and it so happened that the neighborhood band needed a bass player. So I was like, okay, well then I guess I'll buy a bass guitar. They gave me the opportunity to buy my own bass guitar, where they bought it for me and then they made me work it off. So they didn't just hand it to me, but they gave me the opportunity to work for it.
What kind of bass was it?
Oh, it was called an Aspen,
okay.
Which I've never heard of before or since.
I'm assuming electric.
Yeah, totally. It was pretty. It was Rosewood, Sunburst.
Is usually everyone's first guitar. Yeah. My Sunburst Squire. But, I mean, it's wonderful that your family was supportive. I mean, my family was definitely supportive to a point. When I graduated college, my mom was not stoked that I wanted to move to LA to pursue music.
When I dropped out of college after 2 years to go on the road, my parents were not stoked either.
But, and they still aren't. High five.
No, I'm not going to high five that because they are. Because they are.
I came around.
Damn it. Oh, my God. That's the first time I've ever been rejected for a high five on the show. So, wait. That was me.
But While they were upset at the time, they are super supportive now. I mean, they came out to a show that we did a couple weeks ago, and they're super proud, super supportive. They realize the path that I was supposed to take was not finishing college with a psychology degree and doing that, because I just would not have been happy. So good. That's why your high five was rejected.
I know. I mean, I'll cry after the show, but I'm not upset about that rejection because it was justified. So believe it or not, we're almost done with segment one, but I think this is a really good time for you to talk about Tidal Babes quickly. And then I think the next segment I'd like to go into, like, writing, producing, and advice.
Okay.
So let's hear about those babes of Tidal, of which by the time this episode airs, it'll be long after. But Emily and I saw the show last night, and it was just really fun, catchy, very 80s to me.
Right.
Smart, short pop songs.
Yep. Okay.
Is that an okay description?
Oh, yeah. I love it. I mean, I feel like it's equally influenced by new wave stuff as far as pop punk and just general indie rock.
But it's very riffy. So it's like that's where I hear the 80s to me.
Totally. So I was playing in bands for a long time and then decided, well, I knew always that I wanted to be a professional songwriter and producer. And I hit the point around 30 where I decided I didn't want to be in a project and trying to make it as a professional songwriter, producer. You know, it's all opportunity costs. When you're working on one of those, you're not working on the other. So
I'm talking to an artist manager who has a radio show, who also writes, who's also a dad.
So you get that you can't do everything.
I can try, and Emily tells me I can do nothing.
I do everything.
Everything.
So for a while, I stopped having projects of my own and focused on writing songs.
How old are you then?
At around 30.
Okay, so this was after, you know, you were really touring a lot?
Right. Oh, I lived on the road for like 2 or 3 years. Then I was doing a bunch of writing, trying to find a publishing deal. That happened, and after doing—
Concord, right?
Concord, yes. Concord and Cutcraft. Then
a lot of alliteration there.
Yep. Chris, Qualls, Concord, Cutcraft.
Caldman's Curds.
There you go.
Oof.
So
thanks, Em. Thanks, Kem.
We hit our stride, my partner Eric and I, with our songwriting.
Eric,
our
the bass player from last night?
From last night. Eric Straube, bass player, songwriter extraordinaire.
Talented guy.
I felt personally that I had established my brand as a songwriter and producer enough that I could have a project again, because I missed playing, missed touring, missed performing on stage, missed rehearsals, deciding
just
merch
missed
designs.
Being in a band.
Yeah, exactly. Because I grew up doing that and I loved it, and so I decided I wanted to start a project where it was all of my friends and my wife. So it would be fine no matter what. I'll give you a high five for that one.
High five. I just touched him. By the way, your wife is a wonderful front woman and a sweet lady.
Oh, God. She's the best. I love her.
I hope so.
So
that would be weird if that came out on the show that you didn't.
Oh, yeah. Nope. Not going to get into that.
No,
I love
her.
She's
wonderful.
My favorite person.
Good. Kelly and Max are tied for mine.
When we started the project, we decided we were going to write every song in an hour, because in sessions that I'm doing for the publishing company for other artists or other songwriters or sync or whatever it is, there's a tendency to overthink everything, where we can get hung up on one line for hours. And most of the time you end up going back to
the original line.
Yeah, what your gut was suggesting anyway. So with Tidal Babes, we wanted to not overthink anything, and so we said we were going to write every song in an hour. We could refine it later in—
Are you meticulous about that? Like, do you have, like, a stopwatch?
No.
Okay.
But most of them are well under an hour. Basically, it's more the concept of trust your gut, don't overthink things, and if the song is cool, then we'll use it. And if it sucks, then you just wasted 45 minutes. And that's not a big deal. Yeah.
Last question of this segment. So when you guys are doing that, because I've never heard anyone say that before, do you come in completely fresh with none of the ingredients? Or is there a little bit of like an idea or maybe like a thesis statement coming into it?
There's usually a starting point, either a riff or on my phone just for songwriting in
general.
Like a
memo?
Yeah, I have a song theme list or, you know, like tidbits of lyrics that's like you could scroll down for like 4 minutes straight and you'd never hit the bottom of it. So a lot of
talking
time.
Talking and talking, but yeah, never saying shit.
Exactly. When.
That was a lyric, Emily. Wow.
Sorry. Yeah, for those that don't know, that is a reference to my own band, Tidal Babes.
I referenced you while you are here.
There you go.
He's smiling, I'm not sure if it's uncomfortable.
So mad.
No, I never smile uncomfortably. Anyway, great segue.
Sick segue. But I think that that's an interesting component, and I definitely want to talk a little bit more about writing songs and whatever advice you have on that front, but we are done with segment one. So, Emily, what adjective would you use to describe the past 23 minutes of your life?
I'm running out of adjectives. I
you
need
can
to
use
make
the same one as you used before. He's not going to fucking know.
Wow. Damn.
His eyes popped out of his head.
Hard.
No, I'm very happy Chris is here. I was legitimately excited for this interview, and I still am.
All right. Well, after that line, I'm going to say juicy.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm going to say stoked.
Cool.
What about you?
I like juicy. I'm going to go with juicy as well.
Okay.
I don't think I've ever used that one for a show yet either, so.
I mean, what flavor juice?
I go more towards like mangoes or tropical juices.
Are you too young to remember mango from SNL?
Yes.
Okay, good. I like apple cider. Chris, thank you. We're going to take a short break. If you are listening and you have to go to the bathroom, this is the time to do that. If you want to listen to some badass songs or Viagra ads or whatever Adobe is playing, it's your destiny. We'll be right back with Mr. Chris Qualls on Waldman's Words. So I just asked Emily.
Welcome back to the show.
She fought and won. Can you explain what you just did?
He asked who wanted to do the intro, and I said that we should fight for it, which seems to be a theme this week. I told you
yesterday.
Yeah.
Yesterday, she's like, step to me.
I told him to square up yesterday.
First of all, I haven't gotten to a fight since you were -5. Second of all, I would never hit a woman.
In front of your wife and child.
What an influence I am. Anyway, we are back with Mr. Chris Qualls from Tidal Babes, songwriter, husband, lover of Dashboard Confessional.
True.
Didn't know that about you.
Yep. We are going to be writing a article.
After Thanksgiving.
After Thanksgiving about the top, what did we decide?
Albums.
Right? 8, 9 Dashboard Confessional albums.
I'm looking this up right now because we only count albums, like albums.
So much for being a Dashboard Confessional fan.
Well, when I sent him my list, I literally had every EP, every covers EP, and he was like, nah, bro.
Yeah, verbatim, only albums. Because then these articles would just be, like, there's so many B-side albums. There's so many different things. I want it to just be on the albums that they released, either themselves or through a label.
Well, then you do a part two of only the EPs.
When we do Burks from a Berkman, why don't you do that?
You know what? You're my first guest. Yep. Yeah.
I mean, that's not a bad idea. So do you want me to count in front of you the albums, and then you're going to be upset because you're wrong?
Riveting content.
Oh, yes.
Seven.
Please.
Seven.
Swiss, Places, Mark, Dusk, Shade, Ending, Crooked.
Sounds like perfume line.
Available at Macy's. Have you ever noticed when you walk into a department store, it smells like a lot of cologne?
Yeah.
Thank you. That's my TED Talk. So back to you, songwriting. So you've been doing this for a long time. In fact, you've been writing songs for more than half your life.
That's true. Yeah. First time I ever picked up a bass, I started writing a song that was probably terrible, but the two kind of went
hand in
hand.
Everyone starts terrible.
Yeah. As soon as I started learning instruments, I was also writing songs. I loved writing in general as a kid, poems, stories, all that kind of stuff. So as soon as I was learning to play musical instruments, I just started writing lyrics that would kind of go with it, usually overly influenced by someone else's song at the time.
But of course. I mean, everyone gets it from someone except for Mozart. He invented music. He smiled and almost laughed, or he laughed, but it was like one of these laughs, like the...
It was a little choked, that's true.
I'm going to acknowledge that there was a joke, but I'm not going to acknowledge that it was funny.
You were extra sassy and mean to me today. Like, what did I do? Like, I got you into the Tidal Babe show. You wouldn't have gotten in had you not known me.
Ooh.
Damn it.
Yeah, what the fuck, bro?
You
anyway,
look nice but today, Scott.
Oh, thank you. In my like, workout-type clothes.
I'd like to think that the sassy female lead of Tidal Babes influenced you a little bit. And
yeah.
So you brought your sassy pants today.
That was smart. I'm going to fist bump you. Because not only did you promote your band, but you also promoted your wife and family.
I'm empowered now.
All right. So speaking of empowering, I try to and I fail. So basically with you, so empowering songwriting. Emily Burke is a 22-year-old college graduate who just was like, you know what? I want to write songs. Hypothetical. What advice would you give to her? She's a proficient piano player and is a solid singer. Both of these things are not true.
Yeah.
Okay. Advice that I would give to her is write every day. The most important thing I've learned about songwriting is it's not about what's good. It's about filtering out what's bad. And you're going to have bad ideas. It happens. But you need to just keep going, write every day, and eventually you'll start to develop your own quality control, I guess you could call it.
Qualsily control.
There you go. All puns all day long.
Waldman's words brought to you by pun.
We should do a, oh my God, we should check the calendar and see if we're recording on like April Fool's Day, and it'll be the one episode without a pun.
It'd be a very short episode. Continue though, because I think that what you just remind me of, and you might think this is a weird like transition, but it's fucking Waldman's words. Stand-up comics, they're told to perform every night, no matter what, because you flex your muscle and you learn what works and what doesn't work.
Totally.
Is that fair?
Oh, 100%. And I would say that goes for most
a lot of art.
Yeah, if you think about it, because you have to filter out the bad to get the good, and then you have to filter out the good to get the great. And the only way you're going to be able to do that is by putting in the time, getting the experience, finding your own voice, and figuring out what works and what doesn't.
You just remind me also of another analogy. So I'm one for one with analogies, and this is not a joke. What was there was a thing about 400 hours or what the Beatles did. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, there's a quote or a saying.
Yeah,
about
where it takes, I think it's 10,000 hours to end up being a master of it.
Okay.
So yeah, you know what? Rather than us guessing what this direct quote was, since we have technology, computers, and iPhones, let's just be accurate
about
it.
It's Malcolm Gladwell.
Whoa.
Oh, and I appreciate him laying the fucking smack down on my candy ass to do this, but basically, 10,000 hour rule. In 2008, Malcolm Gladwell published, I'm not going to read the rest of it, spend 10,000 hours for the magic number of greatness.
Yeah, that's accurate.
How many days or years is 10,000 hours?
Well, let's do 10,000.
I know that 525,600
minutes is how you measure a year, right?
Yeah.
All right, so let's just say 10,000 hours and 365 days. So divide that, the number is 27.
So 27 years?
Not telling you shit.
I haven't even been alive enough on this earth to be a master of anything.
You can't master anything. That's the moral of the story. And listen to us, because we are old.
Oh, my God.
Wisdom comes with age. Anyway, so now here's another hypothetical scenario, because the advice you gave her is, I think, sound advice, pun intended. You tell someone, dad joke, and pun and schmoke, you tell someone just to master your craft, just go over and over and trial and error. So Emily has written three songs that she deems to be, you know, recordable. Now, I know that you are a producer.
Correct.
So she, you know, has a budget. Do you advise that she does it herself and demos it out before coming to someone like you? Or how does that process work for you in the most beneficial manner?
The easiest way and most cost-effective way to do that is to probably use voice notes on your phone to get the basic idea down. in your hypothetical situation, you are an expert pianist. And so I would recommend just getting a good voice note with the piano and the vocals. Send that to any potential producers that you would be interested in. Find out if they are receptive to the song, because that's going to be the most important thing. Because
how do you know for sure if someone's receptive to it?
If they're willing to do it for back-end points, that means that they believe in it. Now, I'm not saying that's always going to happen, because producers have to pay their rent and their food and their dog food bills as well. But if they really believe in something, they're going to be willing to do it for the back end, because they feel that there is going to be a back end to that song, EP, album, whatever it is.
Or some kind of combination of back end and totally. Money up front.
Or see the possibilities for sync or licensing, but they see something in the song.
Can you explain what sync and licensing are, though, to people listening? Because, like, honestly, this really, like I said before we started the episode, I really want this to be a tutorial for some kid in Riverside,
sure.
Some kid in Woodland Hills.
Absolutely.
See what I did there?
So when you're listening to internet radio or regular radio or watching TV or watching Hulu, whenever a commercial comes on and there's a song in the background, that's an example of sync / licensing. Whenever you're watching a movie and there's a song that plays in the background, there's a hair commercial that has Uptown Funk by Bruno Mars in it.
I always think of the hair commercial L'Oreal with transplants.
Oh,
that's what I
that was a huge one.
That was ginormous.
But those are all examples of sync and licensing. And that in 2019, 2020, maybe by the time this airs, is one of the biggest ways that songwriters, producers, the music industry in general is going to make their money a lot more than they would off of streaming or album sales, because there is a lot of money still in advertising and there's not that much money left in streaming.
So it's touring or licensing. Those are the, by far, like, I mean, even if you get a major Mabel record deal, if you can get a Mabel record deal, I'll be very impressed with you. But a major label deal, like, you don't walk out with that much money. Especially if you have a band with like four or five people.
Right. And you're going to have to recoup it anyway. Whereas if you get a good ad, I mean, like if you land a car commercial ad, like a.
They spend money like crazy.
Oh my God. You could walk away with $100,000 on that.
You can make more on one song that you recorded 17 years ago than most people make in a year.
Oh, 100%. And those are more the outliers than the normal. You know, for example, we have gotten placed on a lot of television shows like
Who's we? So Big it's you Bang and your Theory. Partner?
Yeah, my partner and I, sometimes Tidal Babes, sometimes my old band Electric Valentine, because that was very electro pop. And they used
shout out to Electric Valentine, Warped Tour Titans.
Totally. Warped Tour 2010.
I did Warped Tour 06. What the fuck?
You're the OG.
Yeah, and you're a little bit older than me, but our mommies were pregnant at the same time.
Oh,
Matt.
Great.
Cute.
Thanks, yeah. Man. Yeah, great. Cute from him. Great from Emily. Awesome. Continue, because I think this is very important for people to realize that there's a complete way to make a really solid fucking living in music, and people always say that there isn't. There is.
Oh, totally. It's not... With Electric Valentine, it was a lot easier than most of the projects that I had done before. Because
it was more mainstream?
Yeah, well, it was electropop, and it was still very catchy and jingly and had a lot of hooks in it. So it was being used very often in television shows for the dance scene, the club scene. And it was dancey and had some good beats to it, but it was still accessible because of Lauren's voice, because of the vocal hooks.
Shout out to Lauren. Hi.
Frank Zumo's wife. Yes.
Oh, I know Frank.
Which is the reason we met in the first place.
Yeah, no, it's 100% true. And you know what's crazy is Frank is from Long Island like I am, but we didn't know each other from there. He might have known who I was or vice versa. But I saw him at Adobe and I just said hi. And he said hi. And I wrote him a message saying, good seeing you. He wrote me back. And then a month later, I became his manager.
That's amazing.
Isn't that fucking crazy?
Yeah. Great dude.
Talented mofo.
Totally. Actually, Frank might have done more for me in my career than anyone else I know, to be honest.
Explain why. Let's make this about Zumo's Zerds.
So Frank is married to Lauren, used to be Lauren Baird, is now Lauren Baird hyphen Zumo, who was
for the record, I got a baby gift from Lauren Baird. I didn't know who it was. And then I was just like, oh shit, that's Frank's wife, Lauren. Cause like I got two badass onesies. Anyway, continue. Get back to the Baird.
We were in an electropop band together called Electric Valentine. This was all towards the end of my band career, the end of the MySpace days, beginning of the Instagram days.
We love you, Tom.
And Frank and Lauren got married, and Frank has been super supportive of me and my songwriting and production to the point where he recommended me for assisting John Feldman, which opened up so many doors for me that I can never thank the dude enough. And to this day, still helps me out with anything that I need ever.
Played
still
a show with him just before I saw you guys for the first time.
Yep. Had Tidal Babes open up for him at Emo Night at the Echoplex in Los Angeles. And to this day, Will just randomly hit me up and like, hey, man, this guy needs a producer. I recommended you. Oh, hey, you should reach out to this guy for this reason. Is always thinking of ways to help me out. And so I can't show my appreciation for the dude enough.
He's a hustler. Guy. He's a hard worker. And this is, I think, a good segue to what might be my last advice type question. So music, I think, in particular, is a people industry of like, oh, I vouch for that guy or I worked with him. What advice would you give for, you know, Emily Burke, like, records her wonderful three-song demo and decides to pursue this full-time? What advice would you give her in regards to collaborating with other people?
Well, because she is already in LA, that's a big part of this, because networking is just as important as being a good songwriter.
I mean, be more important.
Yeah, because you can have the best song in the world, and if no one hears it, then other than your parents and whoever was around when you were writing it, no one's going to care. So being in a major city, especially a musical city like L.A. or
New York or
New
Nashville.
New York or Nashville, yeah.
Those are the trifecta.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe even Austin these days. But
you really think so?
I think it's coming up, yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. I love Austin.
Me too. But going out, meeting people, networking, that's equally, if not more important than hustling on your writing grind. Because
what do you think so many bands that you might be listening to, like, how the fuck do they get these tours? It's like they're friends with the bands.
Totally. I love LA, and Lindsay and I will go out practically every night to different bars, different parties, different shows, whatever it is, because you never know who you're going to meet. One of the most influential people I've met in my musical career, I met at a house party, and we were both opening the fridge to grab a beer at the same time. And he ended up being an assistant for a big producer and has gone on to become a big producer himself.
Can you out him or no?
I'll keep it anonymous right now.
Just so you guys know, he's talking about George Martin, who did every single Beatles album.
Totally. Met him at D'Angelo's birthday party.
Dope.
But you never know who you can meet in L.A., in New York, in Nashville, maybe in Austin, because everyone here has more than likely moved here from a different city because they're
separately
a hustler too.
That's true. I'm a rare person. I've born and raised.
You're
in
definitely
state.
A rare person.
Yeah. Well, I think LA is kind of an anomaly, and I'll give it to New York and like Austin too. But I don't know, something about LA in particular, and maybe I'm biased, but everyone here is something. You know, like the person handing you your coffee is not just a barista. They also write scripts or they're actors or
hyphens.
Yeah. Yep. Everyone here is here for something else.
And everyone here is on their grind. And
yeah,
those are the people you want to meet and associate yourself with. And I mean, even if you become friends with them, you don't have to go out networking for the purpose of networking. You know, like you can go out and just, I find that just grabbing a couple drinks with people, smoking a bowl with someone, whatever it is.
What? They have actually the cool weed show on iDobie.
Maybe that's just like an LA thing where it's like, who cares? Met him at the dispensary.
Oh no, I mean it's literally like me saying I met you at rehab. It's all the same.
Yeah, but I feel like if you go out and you're like, hey man, my name's Chris. I write great songs. Here's how you can help me.
If I did that, it wouldn't work for me because I'm Scott. No, but I'm sorry.
Hi, I'm insert your name here. I have this that I need your help with. Like that's
agenda driven.
Yeah, no one wants to do that. So just go out, have fun, meet people, and then you know you find out later that this person works for this TV show. One of my really, really good friends, I knew him for like a year and a half before I even realized that he was doing music on a bunch of very popular TV shows. Then we collaborated on a song together, and now we're actually this week going to be working on some music for a kids' TV show. And I had no idea for the first year and a half that I knew him that he was even involved in music at all, because we were just hanging out, talking about other things, and it never came up.
Get off the couch. Go out, meet people. You can get a lot more done in one night out than you may be able to get done in 1 week home on the computer. And you know what's funny? We're going to end on this. Our guest last week was Rob McDermott, who managed Linkin Park for their first four albums. And he said a similar thing about most real relationships have like highs when it's night and when you're out and about and when alcohol is involved or if you don't drink or whatever. And that's when the real substantive real like broing or sissing moments happen.
Absolutely.
Thank you for being gender.
I did that intentionally, and I don't know if I approve of my own usage of sissing, but
I mean it's fine. I'll be honest, like I definitely have a bit of a difficulty, but I'm also very young and I look like a teenager. And even though I do like go out and network, it's like, well, you look like you're 15. I don't know who you are. So that's great.
But get off that train and just fucking do it,
because yeah,
I look like I was six when I was 22 and look at me now.
But you're nice and you're authentic, and I think that goes a long way.
Yep.
Yes. I'll leave you with one story that I feel is probably the best advice I could give anyone, which is when I was first starting out trying to find a publishing deal, and for those of you that don't know, publishing is to a songwriter what a label is to a band. They take a percentage of all the money that you make, but because of that, they're incentivized to make money for you. So they get you in sessions, they get your songs placed in commercials.
They don't make money unless you make money.
Exactly. So I was trying to find a good publishing company, and I was going around taking meetings everywhere, and I finally locked down this lady who I'd been trying to get in a room with forever. When she finally gave me a meeting, she was like, hey, sorry to do this. I have a call. Can you wait around for half an hour and then we'll take our meeting? In that time, her assistant was there and he seemed genuinely interested in the music and what I was doing and had done his research ahead of time and checked out a couple of the songs because, you know, he was answering her emails.
Emily.
Yeah, that's me.
We basically spent the entire 30 minutes just broing down. We had a lot of similar interests in music, and he was just a good guy, and I enjoyed talking to him. And so for 30 minutes, we just kind of hung out. And when I finally did have the meeting with the lady, I felt she was somewhat dismissive, didn't really care about the songs, and kind of had me out of there in 10 minutes. I was waiting longer than I was actually in the meeting.
It's a good feeling.
But her assistant always emailed me and was following up. And every time I wrote a new song, he's like, send me what you have. Send me what you have. I just like what you're doing. I love it. Eventually, he got a job as an A&R for a different publishing company. And he was like, I love what you're doing. I think you should come sign with us. And in the meantime, I'm going to like push some of your songs for sync. And he got us television shows before we were even working with the publishing company. And now we signed with his publishing company and he's my day-to-day guy. And all of that happened from just hanging out with the dude who was...
Had she not had a phone call, your whole life would be different.
Oh, totally. And he's the best dude and like one of my best
friends
now.
Have him on the show.
Yeah. Oh, he's actually, that's a really good idea.
100%. We try to get people from every facet of the industry, and we've had some people like Mara from the publishing world and all that. But 100%, we can lock that in. But I guess we're going to end on that note. See, we literally just proved the power of in-person networking.
Yeah.
Isn't that fucking crazy?
And also just being good to everybody. And as an assistant, I feel like I need to say, be nice to assistants. They really are the gatekeepers to basically everything.
I'm telling you this. If Emily tells me about an interaction that she has with an artist or a label or a manager that is less than A+, I go in as a tiger.
Oh, yeah. It gets back to everybody. You just screwed yourself.
Yep. So speaking of screwing ourselves, we're going to end this episode. So, Chris, can you please reveal to the world your socials and some Tidal Babe socials, and then Emily will close us out.
I'm trying to think. Tidal Babes is on Instagram at Tidal_Babes, and then
I'll look it up
at Tidal Babes with no underscore on Twitter. I don't know. It's something confusing where someone grabbed one of them and we have to get the trademark to get it back.
Just
so.
Type Tidal Babes into the search bar.
That's so much easier.
Yeah, I know, but telling people to do specific things.
Whichever one has the most followers, that's them.
Absolutely.
Well said.
And you know what? I'll tag Tidal Babes in our socials, so just click the button.
Yeah, don't even listen to Chris anymore.
Nope. And then my personal ones, it's at Chris Qualls, Qualls. So thank you guys for having me. I had a lot of fun.
I had fun too. Emily, I would love to hear what you have to say now, and I'm not running out of the room. By the way, Tidal Babes is Tidal_Babes on Instagram. And on the Twitter, it is...
Stand by.
One word, Tidal Babes.
Great. Awesome. Well, Chris, thank you for being here. You could listen to Waldman's Words live every single Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern, or if you are up early on the weekends like a crazy person, you could hear the reruns 5 a.m.
Ah, crazy.
Yeah, Scott. Basically just Scott.
Yeah, even before baby.
5 a.m. Pacific Time, 8 a.m. Eastern Time, or you could listen anytime that you want on Idobe.com, Spotify.
Alexa.
Yeah,
you
iTunes.
Just pointing at me.
Alexa, well, you cut me off. I'm getting there.
I'm sorry.
Alexa's always last. Oh.
You save. Well, I thought women come first.
Nah, Alexa's last. You could ask your Amazon Alexa to enable Idobe Radio, and then you could listen to us on Idobe Radio. So, Chris, if you have an Amazon Alexa, you could hear your voice coming out of that little machine.
That's great. I don't, but now I might have to buy one.
I have the new Google Play.
Yeah, I have Google Home.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
Idobe, get on Google Home.
That's We're going to end on this note. Chris is a wonderful guy. Emily is a wonderful gal. And I'm Scott.
I'm also a wonderful guy.